Hi, I'm Brian Brody. As a parent, I'm always looking for opportunities to interact in a deep and meaningful way with my children. Sometimes the competition for their attention can be pretty fierce. I'm here to tell you that I've discovered a fantastic way through audio drama to captivate their minds. In today's exciting podcast, I had the opportunity and the pleasure to sit with and interview four of the leaders in audio theater. On today's show, you'll learn how executive producer Bill Hyde took his lifelong love of history and a story that positively impacted his children and grandchildren in a most remarkable way and share it with families everywhere. In his quest to help the next generation live historical adventures, Bill set out to find the best in the audio theater industry in order to bring the G.A. Henty classic Under Drake's Flag to life. You'll hear from John Fornoff, one of audio drama's most prolific writers. John has worked on 8 major audio theater projects, and you'll probably recognize his work on the Focus on the Family's Adventures in Odyssey. You'll learn from Mark Drury, an award-winning sound engineer whose talents help bring the audio blockbuster Narnia to life. You'll listen to Emmy Award-winning composer John Campbell describe how he creates musical scores for major audio dramas. John's impressive resume includes Chronicles of Narnia, Adventures in Odyssey, and Lamplighter Theater. So, if you've ever wanted to know how real audio dramas and audio theater are produced, you're not going to want to miss today's show. Remember, the audio dramas being discussed today aren't just books being read. They're truly audio movies for your mind, and the passion that goes into their production is extraordinary and unmistakable. We're certain you'll enjoy today's show.
Welcome to Off the Grid Radio. Better ideas to bust you and your family out of today's global control grid. Now, here's today's show.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Off the Grid News, the radio version of offthegridnews.com with a very special group of guests today. But first, I'm Brian Brody, as always, here with Mr. Bill Hyde. Bill, how are you, sir?
Brian, I've never been better. It's great to be with you today. It's always a pleasure. Good to see you today. Beautiful, sunny. It's sunny for some other reasons.
Sunny for some other reasons today.
Let me tell you, Brian, I'm probably more excited about today's show than maybe any show that we've ever done because we're kind of at a culmination point of a project that we started a year ago, and you and I have been talking a lot about the project, but what's the project been born out of? I mean, in other words, you've been hinting about this thing that we've been doing, but what's created the situation whereby we said, hey, that's a worthy product to go ahead and start thinking about doing? And I have to say to you, we've been in the self-reliance business for 5 years, and I've known you for 5 years now. But you and I in our private conversations have something that we talk about. And the fact is that a lot of folks are sort of not prepared in a spiritual way. They're not prepared for things in a mental way. And so we began to think about what is it that we can do to sort of help inculcate that idea of people getting prepared mentally. And so one of the things we thought we'd do was create a audio theater, audio drama of a real life character, one of my heroes. And so today we're here with three guys that have been working on this project for a year. And we've been in London together. One of the guys is from California, from all over the place. And we're here today in the studio talking about HentyAlive.com, which is our new website with this new project. So we're here to talk about a year's worth of work, and we're kind of trying to bring the whole thing into focus, and I couldn't be more excited than to have the guys that are here with us today.
Fantastic. And what I was so excited about, Bill, when I learned that they were going to be here was just the passion that everyone had to bring to this project to make it work. You know, a lot of things you and I do, if we're doing a commercial, we're doing a radio show, someone will call in and we think of it in the morning, or Sarah will book a guest a week before, runs it by Jeremy produces the spot. But this morning's segment –
is really about a group of people coming together for over a year and not just working together. The guys that worked on the project, this was them bringing their personal passions, as we're going to learn from each of our distinguished guests, not only their passions in the day, but a long resume of things that they've done. I mean, these guys have won awards. They're the best at what they do.
One of the things that I appreciate about all three of you is that when I say the word excellence, it means something. There's a resonation of something that's very right to the bone. In other words, what is excellence to some people is not excellence to other people. But our guests today, I think, exude excellence in their work. And so why don't you begin the introductions, Brian, and we'll start to talk with our guests.
Fantastic. I think what we'll do is, just because this setup is a little different, Mark, why don't you jump in, tell us, give us your name, give us a little bit about who you are, and then we'll circle back around and talk about why we're so fired up to have you here.
Sure. I'm Mark Drury. I'm a sound designer. And my position on this project was I was the one that went and recorded the voices for this audio drama we did, and then came back, edited all that, and did the sound effects, and pretty much did the full production on that. So my background is in audio, music, sound design, and used to work for Focus on the Family for many years, doing some of their audio drama projects, radio theater, the Narnias, things like that. So,
oh, cool, Narnia. I've heard a little bit about that, like off Broadway
yeah,
thing, right?
Yeah, yeah.
A little bit about that. And I hear that there's a little something that sits on a bookshelf behind you and taunts you when you're at your desk. Tell us a little bit about that.
Oh, well, okay, let's blow our own horns here, shall we?
Sure, please.
Okay, all right, blow away. We won the Peabody Award back in 1997.
Congratulations, that's great.
Thank you. It was for a project called, it was about Dietrich Bonhoeffer. And he was another hero of the faith who stood up against Nazi Germany and during World War II. And we did that project. It was well received. We won the Peabody Award for that. And so that was actually quite an honor to get that. Because at the time, I didn't even know what a Peabody was.
Well, you know what? We're very glad to have you here and obviously be a part of Bill's team. Why don't you introduce the gentleman to your left, please?
This would be Mr. John Fornoff, who's our esteemed, let's go down the list, writer, producer, director, and all-around good guy.
All right, John, is any of that true? No, okay, good. I know the good guys part is true, John. I know that's true.
Yeah. So, it's been – what's so cool, and Bill alluded to it, I think we've got – like, I want to brag on my team. We got an amazing team of talented people, starting with we've got a team of writers. We've got actors. We went to London to get some of the best actors. We got sound design. If you listen to the show, I mean, are we going to give a little snatch of the show,
sample? We will.
Oh, yeah. When you hear it, you'll say, wow. I mean, we did just like a movie. I mean, Mark and work with Rob Jorgensen as well, doing Foley on it and doing sound design. When you hear it, it's like,
what's Foley?
Wow.
Tell people what Foley is, John.
It's like
a lot of people
in the back
don't know.
You'll see it in the behind the scenes DVDs, but actually, like when you walk the footsteps out, you know, with your feet, you know, kind of thing. And Mark can tell more about it, but it's you're doing the human sounds, what happens behind the scenes, and it makes it real. It's not just, this is not like an audiobook where a guy reads a book, okay? This is like fully dramatized sound effects, and then you've got music. The music, John Campbell's my health, it just does a fantastic job with the music. So for me, I've worked on like seven different audio projects, worked with Adventures in Odyssey. There's another one called Lamplighter Theater. Worked on just about seven different ones. But this one, oh, wow. Yeah, and this is very exciting.
Cool. We're looking forward to talking about it. Yeah. And the gentleman to your left, John.
This is John Campbell. This guy does fantastic music. When you listen to a show, everyone has a distinct personality. It's just like he's an amazing, amazing musician. But there's John.
I'm from California, as we're talking. I love to surf and grew up there. But I've had both feet in both the Christian and the secular market for years, dating back to, for 25, 30 years. We're talking about the Peabody. I actually have spent years writing a lot of Saturday morning kids cartoons for the networks, for Disney and Fox, and I have an Emmy on my wall.
Whoa. Very nice.
So I don't know if that, but again, it was a show that won an Emmy, and it was a thing called Where on Earth is Carmen Sandiego. I wrote three seasons of that, which was a very popular show. But grew up, my first gig was with, now for young listeners, they're not going to remember who Debbie Boone was, but I played for Debbie Boone for years, but then got involved in, as a session player, keyboard player, worked with a lot of rock bands, well-known bands but then got involved I do write. We were talking about Focus on the Family. They've got a kid show called Adventures in Odyssey. Mm-hmm. I've been with that from the beginning, But then it has spurred on to so many other projects and so many other ministries and other jobs. So it's been really fabulous. But being here with John and Mark are guys that I have worked with for years and years. We live in different parts of the country, and we love to laugh, and we're having a good time.
Yeah.
Well, Bill, it looks like you have a great team assembled to help you in the quest, as we've talked about before, in the Henty Project. What do you think? What do you think now that you get to see them again?
It's great. As I said, it's great to have everybody here. It's great to see y'all, as I say, in the South, and just to be able. We have been, you know, we met originally. You guys, you and Mark came out, John, and then we obviously met again in London, which was a blast hanging out in London with all of the actors. And I think some of the people, when they listen to this, are really going to appreciate. We've got a lot of behind the scenes kind of stuff, just fun with Brian Blessed, but. Do you remember in the studio, just our narrator in this Under Drake's Flag, the name of this Henty book that we've taken and made an audio drama, an audio theater out of, Brian Blessed, the man, friend of the Queen, friend of the royal family, friend, you know, very, very famous in England. Do you remember having him? Are you talking about a character?
Oh, wow.
Do you remember having him in the booth?
Oh, yeah.
And dealing with him?
What's funny about Brian's big. He's bombastic. He's just, that kind of thing. And he looks. I mean, he plays the role. Okay, this show's called The Extraordinary Adventures of G.A. Henty. Okay, and he is R.G.A. Henty. I mean, it's Henty's like,
casting,
he's
really.
Like, yeah, he's like over 6 feet tall, over 240 pounds, a man's man, you know. And Brian kind of looks like him. In fact, like Henty was, you know, he was there. He palled around with the Prince of Wales. He was there at the opening of the Suez Canal. He was a war correspondent. He was like almost shot as a spy. All these kind of, he lived adventure. Okay. Brian's like that too. He was like one of the oldest guys, or I think he was the oldest guy, to attempt to ascend Mount Everest. It's like, wow.
See, he's like
an embodied Henty.
Sure.
In fact, with the beard and everything. Like, he's got the beard. He's got the big guy. And he talks big like that, you know. And it's amazing. It's amazing. Yeah.
Yeah, it was an amazing time there. And then we've got a great, and he fell in love with the script. If you remember him saying that, and I think we've got some clips of him actually saying just how powerful he thought the script was and how he thought that brought history to life.
Mm.
And I think that's one of the things, guys, that I get most excited about, because I think one of the problems, we were talking about culture a little bit earlier and talking about what's going, I think one of the issues that I think about that's most extraordinary is our generation, our culture seem to have lost something, to have misplaced something. And I kind of want to get your comments on this a little bit, because why do we need heroes? Why do we need to talk about some of these things? We seem to have lost something that Attila the Hun couldn't take, that Hitler couldn't get, that, you know, all of the arch villains in history who have been threats to humanity couldn't steal from us. We've just set aside and misplaced it. And I'm talking about these ideas of courage. I'm talking about what a legacy actually is and what it looks like. What do we pass down to our children? What is it that, what if you look and say, what are we passing down to our children right now, and look at us as a culture, I think Henty would be aghast. Certainly Sir Francis Drake would be aghast at the legacy that we're leaving our culture. Well, there's two ways to find out what any given culture holds highest, right? So this is if an anthropologist walk into a primitive culture, they look for two things. What is the source of law? That's in that culture. What's the source of law? And what is it that you think is the most important thing that you want to tell the next generation? So how do you educate your kids? Right, that's two real strong measuring sticks for cultural transmission. And so I think the project comes at a great time, because we're at a place where we've lost this idea.
Completely.
Completely. You guys want to jump in a little bit? And
can I throw something in? Might be fun to listen to. If we play like a little bit of the open, play that open, it's like 45 seconds. And in that is kind of a summation of what you're talking about. It kind of zeroes in on those. Can we go ahead and play that? Can we do that? Play
sure.
the open?
Okay. Sure.
Join us now as we explore history's most daring expeditions and greatest adventures. From the shimmering sands of ancient Egypt to the misty wildwoods of Patagonia.
I see us, Captain!
Fire away, lad!
Discover stories of valor and virtue, daring and determination,
right,
character and courage. from history's master of storytelling, these are The Extraordinary Adventures of G.A. Henty.
Okay, so as you're listening to it, I love this. These are neat parties. These are stories of you know, the greatest expeditions, the greatest adventures, that kind of stuff. But it gets down to the nitty-gritty. These are stories of daring and determination, valor and virtue, character and courage. Those are the things we're missing today. We're talking about that.
And those are the things we're missing today.
Yeah.
And we need to teach our kids that the most valuable things in life are something worth paying a price for. That things don't come in some kind of existential moment, that there is value in delaying gratification and so forth, and waiting for things and working hard towards things. And I think that was very much a part of Drake's world, obviously, and it was very much a part of Victorian England as well.
Right. And if I can jump in, I do believe that our culture as a whole has started to lose over the last 50, 60 years that hero mentality. But not the hero who comes in and saves the day on everything, but the hero who is just a regular person and changes from that person out. Mm-hmm. And we're bombarded with you know, it's a me mentality. I deserve everything that I want now. Mm-hmm. I don't need to work for it. I can just get it. And it's a sad state of affairs when we're even talking to our children who. Where we've worked, because from all of us, we went through a period in the 60s, 70s, 80s where we actually had to work for what we wanted. Mm-hmm. But even to see our kids, who we are trying to teach, have that outside view from mentality saying, well, I want what you have now. Mm-hmm. I want it now. And is it a thing where we just immediately give to them that, or do we actually ask them, you got to work for it. Mm-hmm. You can have it, but you got to work for it.
Could you share the story a little bit about what happened when you played the Open? Would you share that?
Without a doubt. Yeah. The first time I got the Open, I happened to have a house full of grandkids, and I have 11 grandkids. And I think that the 11 grandkids plus some of their cousins and second cousins, we have a very big family, were all there. And they were in a different room. And I got this, and I heard it come in. And so I go to my computer, and I read your note, John. And so I pressed play. And I turned up the volume a little bit, and I was looking at the kids in the other room because I was working myself in my den area, my library, and I turned the volume up, guys, and as soon as the kids heard this, they didn't walk to see what was going on. They ran to me to see what was going on. They ran. And so if that tells you anything, John, I think that that's a pretty powerful thing to have just – and there's kids of pretty much all ages inside that group. I mean, I think my oldest is – it's my oldest grand, 13 years old. So it's a nice cross-section there.
But I think it's kind of a metaphor too. I think you know, there's something in us. We want stories like that. We want the heroes. There's something in us. Even, you know, the culture is telling us this, but inside there's something that resonates with truth. We want true heroes with true courage, true integrity, and valor.
And I think the opening offers an immediate snap on hope.
Yes, yes.
Before even our VO guy comes in, musically. I mean, when I thought about writing the opening theme of Henty, how do I embody Henty into this man that is going to give hope to the a world, but how do we interpret that? Mm-hmm. You know, and how did we interpret that? Because our goal is to not, change what Henty was about. Mm-hmm. I mean, but we want to continue to give that hope. I actually only heard the opening theme for the first time finally produced because I was first thing I had in my head was. John's original VO lines. Mm-hmm. And so I essentially stuck by myself musically. I think, where do I begin? Mm-hmm. And, as I started to do that, but I finally heard the final with all the effects and everything, and it gave me chills.
Yes.
It gave me chills.
Me too.
I write a lot of music, mm-hmm. and not everything I write gives me chills. Hardly anything I do, because I do it every day. Mm-hmm. But it gave me, the hairs on the back of my neck were standing up. It was pretty amazing.
Well, gentlemen, we're going to have to run to a break here in just a minute, but what I'd like to do is when we come back, Bill, if it's cool with you, In addition to the content, I want to talk to John about, you know, the audio. As you said to us earlier, that audio is so important, but also Mark, as a sound designer. I think, Bill, would you agree that that's probably why your grandkids came running? Because it wasn't an audio book. You know, there's music to it. There's a human voice. There's the sound effects. There's all the rest of that. Yeah. Would you think that was a part, not just your grandkids,
oh, it was ear candy.
Your grandkids?
There's no doubt
running.
About it. They had just a twinkle in their eye. That's another thing that I was looking for when they came in. It's fun to watch people sparkle, and so they really genuinely had that. So let's talk about that stuff when we come back, Brian.
Yeah, we're going to run to a quick break, and then John, Mark, of course, John, you can jump in as well. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to a very special broadcast of Off the Grid News, the radio version of offthegridnews.com. Come back right after this short break.
You're listening to Off the Grid News Radio here at offthegridnews.com.
Hi, I'm Brian Brody. Thank you so very much for listening to today's audio podcast, where we're talking about the single most important problem we all face today, and that's the decline of our nation's moral values. I'm happy to report to you that the purpose behind this exciting new Henty Audio Theater presentation of Under Drake's Flag was to give kids rock-solid role models that help build character and conviction so that they can always make great decisions as they grow up. In the next section, you're going to learn how to cultivate your child's imagination in a truly profound and enriching way. You're going to learn the absolute best way for your child to learn, and you'll learn how to leave an unshakable legacy to your children. All coming up in the next segment. Also, please check out our new website, HentyAlive.com. That's HENTY Alive.com. HentyAlive.com, where you can learn more about the newest audio theater blockbuster that critics are calling the greatest swashbuckling adventure ever made.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to this very special edition of Off the Grid News. We're talking about a great project, one that personally I'm very excited in, although that Bill is my friend and my boss, something that I'm looking forward, Bill, to Parker and Paige listening to. I think this is going to be great. Before we went to the break, John, you had said to us earlier about, you know, why audio is so important, how it affects the human mind, that this just isn't an audio book. But if it's cool with you, Mark, can you tell us, as a sound designer, why you think when Bill's grandkids heard it, they sprinted across the room to see what was going on? Talk to us about it, all that, like that kind of thing.
Well, I think we live in a very visual culture, obviously. I mean, where we have so much input visually, TV, you know, everything we see in movies, everything's very visual. And what's interesting about audio, at least from my standpoint, is it, by just doing audio, I think it engages our imagination. So when you hear something, especially a story, and where you can place someone in a scene or in a situation, I think it engages that theater of the mind, which we all have, that frankly, when you see it on the screen, it's kind of like it's being spoon-fed to you. You're seeing it all. You're not as engaged in that moment as you can be when you're listening to something, especially if it's done well. If something has all the key elements, like we've discussed, of the obviously a good story, the music, the sound design, all those elements coming together, I think there is this magical moment that happens where you're pulled into this and you're engaged in a way that I don't know that you can be if it's purely a visual thing.
And then, John, that kind of speaks to what you were saying this morning about your passion for audio.
Oh, yeah.
And why does it affect us? Why, Bill, wouldn't you say, why did Bill's grandkids come darting across the room? Why were they mesmerized by this?
Because the first thing that we normally hear, I mean, anywhere, whether it's visual, our ears are very attuned to a new sensation coming into their mind. We've got, you know, we're just standing around the room. If we hear a train, our minds, we're hearing train, but in our minds, we're visualizing the train going by. We have to visualize it because we don't see it. We're sitting in a room. You know, and again, since I, as a composer, my job has been on writing anything. You know, if I have a set of visuals, that's one thing. But if I have just audio, I have to think differently on how I can get the point of emotion across over speakers or over headphones, but not overtake the story. I think the important thing that what we've all learned, and especially with Marjorie and I, once we have all the pieces, music is usually the last, one of the last areas of production or post-production, you know, after the whole thing. And a lot of times I'm asked to fix things. A scene might not have gone as good. It might have been sounded flat. How does music play into that?
Well, it becomes another character. Truly, the music in an audio drama really takes on and becomes a character, a very vital character in the drama.
However, the one thing that I've learned over the years in underscoring dialogue and even visuals is I cannot become the main character all the time.
Right.
I think young composers will end up wanting to shine, and it becomes a big audio mess, and it draws attention to itself. I like to call music, in many cases, as an emotional wallpaper. I'm just in the background, not even being noticed sometime, but it makes the scene happen.
And you do some great wallpaper.
John and Bill, it's a wallpaper hanger. John, when you and Bill get together to write this, then do you write it thinking that John and Mark are going to get together and
you're talking to John Fornoff, right?
Yes, Fornoff. Yeah, when you write this, John, and you're with Bill, do you guys picture how they're going to be able to hang the wallpaper? Or do you go, hey, we're just writing it. Let the audio guys, let them earn their pay.
Feels like that sometimes.
How does that work?
Well, I think as I'm writing, I'm hearing the voices, you know, I'm hearing the actors, I'm listening, I'm hearing the emotion of it, and John picks up on the emotion really well. Mark has also given him music cues. He's challenging him too. He'll say, "Hey, John, I think we need this," and they'll talk back and forth and kind of work it together.
Very collaborative.
But also a cool thing is as you're writing. Sometimes Mark loves me for this, but I'll put in a scene. I'm thinking, you know, this is gonna be really complicated to do. But you know what? I think.
But Mark, I don't care. Mark will pull it out.
I'll give you an example. We did. I've never heard this on radio, but there was a shark attack where our hero jumps off the ship into the water to save a girl from a shark. Okay. That is a very takes a dagger, goes under the water, stabs the shark, and he's in a shark. Okay, I've never heard that in radio. And I knew Mark could pull it off. And Mark said, oh, let's not do that. It took him how long to do that?
Well, see, you wrote it. You wrote that, you know, page or whatever of dialogue in what? Maybe half an hour? And it took me about 3 days.
Three days.
Well, because I was having to come up with some very specific sounds that I hadn't done before. You don't just, you know, look on a database and go, sound of boy jumping and going underwater and stabbing shark.
Yes.
So you're
don't head over to SeaWorld, just jump into a shark tank and go.
The mic doesn't do well under the water. But we have this back and forth, sometimes very interesting exchanges where I say, thanks, John. You know, your little thing here that you just want to hear has caused me 3 days of work. Now, the flip side of that is it does challenge and push me in a different way. And I can now say I've done a shark attack underwater.
And I wanted to say, because of course, being just, you know, the music guy in the background, I wanted to say, you know, talking about with John Fornoff, because John is the visionary in our, you're the beginning visionary. You work with Bill, you guys discussed ideas. And so I don't see a script until after the fact. In fact, I don't go to any of the acting sessions. I don't go to any of that. I just basically get an audio file with a script. And usually, Mark, once we're done, Mark will have poured his soul into ideas musically. It depends with different clients for me, because sometimes clients will say, John, we love what you do. Here, we're just going to give you the script and you put in what you want. But in this case, with the synonymous synergy that we have, because John is that visionary. On the script, he's going to say shark attack, and he's going to explain that. But it's not going to be readily available for anybody to look. It's not going, okay, now this is the shark attack. Mm-hmm. It's going to be a thing where we have to portray that. We have to put in people's minds, oh my gosh, this is a shark attack and what is going on. So Mark and I, after the visionaries, you know, Bill and John have discussed all that, written the script, they've gone and recorded this, then we have to figure out
how to convey
the attack, because of course with sound effects is another aspect of it, Foley is another aspect, music is another aspect, who and voice, all these different aspects, who is going to be the focus and when, how's it going to be, you know, pull up voice, pull it down, an effect, a piece of music, something that I would do to go to bring all these elements together. It's a work, a team effort. But again, the initial thing, and I'm speaking to John. I mean, you are that visionary. You're that creative guy that is always. I'm amazed at how you're able to come up with these because you think it in your head. And then we have to figure out what you thought.
Which is dangerous.
John, do you think in sound or do you think in pictures?
Both. And that's the cool thing. We're talking about why audio. It's like, because as you're listening to the... Can we play a little part of that? Is that
possible? Sure, absolutely.
Okay. As you're listening to what's happening for anybody listening, why audio is because you are participating in the process. Instead of like Mark talked about like television, movies, it's spoon-fed to you. You know, you get everything. You know, with audio, you are picturing, when you hear this, you're going to see that shark. You're going to see that guy jump into the water. You're going to see this. So
But you're going to use different senses instead of your eyes to put that in your head because everybody's going to have a different picture in their mind, but that's okay.
It awakens your imagination. It becomes part of you.
Yeah. All right, let's go ahead. Is that cool with you?
Yeah,
Bill?
Sure.
We'll go ahead and listen
to
that.
Let's
now.
Listen.
Let's listen to that now.
Gerald, was that my imagination? Or did I just...
That was definitely a girl.
Well, there she is. She cannot swim. She's a Spaniard.
I will not watch her die.
No! Ned! Stop! Stop! I see a shark!
What? Where?
He just circled around. He's going back for her. No, Ned. You must not.
Not to worry. I have my father's dagger.
Ned, no!
Off I go! Stop!
Ned plunged into the water head first. He struck the creature with such force that it was driven sideways from its course toward the girl. Ned was stunned. The shark was not so soft as he had imagined. Quickly, he shook off his stupor, grabbed the fin of the creature, and plunged his dagger into the shark's belly. The shark struck back with its tail. A force so furious, it knocked Ned from his hold. Meanwhile, sailors on deck launched every missile they could at the creature, trying to dodge Ned. The shark now doubled back and rushed Ned with all its might. Just before the shark reached him...
John Fornoff, the whole time I'm listening to that, what blows me away about John and what I dig about him already is he's got his eyes closed.
Talking about John Campbell, not John.
John Campbell, I'm sorry. Talking about John Campbell. When he's got his eyes closed, so when he talks about audio, Bill... You see it not on his, but he's got, even when he says to me, okay, when I'm doing audio, he's looking away from the microphone. Mm-hmm. So he really is into it. Talk to me, though, about working with Bill. Mm-hmm. When Bill comes in and you guys decide you're going to write the script mm-hmm. this way, what did you think about, because this is kind of a new experience for, mm-hmm. for Bill. What was it like saying, all right, Bill, here's how I think this has to play out. Mm-hmm. Was he an easy student? Did he talk to us about that a little bit.
Well, talk about visionary. I mean, this thing wouldn't happen if it wasn't for Bill. I mean, Bill had the vision. Hey, let's get this thing. Let's do this. It's like, wow, that's exciting. And working with Bill has been a joy. It's really fun because he gets excited about it. He draws you. Okay, John, this is what we want to do with this series. We want to, you know, hit all those high points, you know, but stories that wake up people, that wake up the you know, stories of courage and valor and that kind of stuff. What are we doing here? You know, that kind of stuff. And let's get stories that just, you know, give people hope, all that kind of stuff. So he sets the overall vision of it. I get fired up by that, and I'm writing the story. So working with him, it's been a joy. It really is. It's a lot of fun.
And Bill, could you tell our listeners about your son, Nick? I mean, this isn't just something you happen to stumble across, you know, at you're sitting at the airport, you see a magazine, oh, I should do this. Could you tell us quickly about your son, Nick? Because that moved me. When he was a little boy, how did you hook him up with something?
Well, it was very easy for me because Nick had read The Henties as a concerned parent years ago. I had given him The Hentie book. So for him to sort of jump on this project, and if I remember telling him, hey, we're going to do The Hentie thing, we're going to do this, and he's like, oh, no, really? There was a lot of lines of convergence on this. But always keep in mind the backdrop is what's the antidote for the current malaise? What's the problem in culture? What's the problem that you and I, Brian, have listened to over and over and over when we talk about preparedness? We don't really have the mentality of preparedness so much, let alone actually sending that out to your kids and to our young people. And I think that kids are, I wouldn't say all of them have a sense of entitlement, guys, but I would say that there is kind of a lack of calluses on our kids' hands in the spiritual sense. There's not a lot of that. We've been discussing that. So what I was thinking about when you were talking about this idea of visual rather than audio, I was thinking, I heard John McCain one time talk about when he was being held a prisoner And this happened to me the other day, and I'm thinking, wow, that's an amazing, because you know what he said saved his life? His imagination. Mm. So I guess I'm wondering, because he was kept in a, you know, the story is pretty terrible in many ways, but he survived. And you'll find this with many prisoners. They survived because there's a place that they can go, because those memory muscles, imagination muscles have been strengthened at some time in their life. In other words, John McCain's not a product of the culture today. He was a product of a different culture, of the spoken word and reading. And so that allowed him to, I mean, literally in his case, life or death. Some people don't make it in these situations. Right. Some people die.
It depends on what they've learned over their lives.
Mm-hmm. What's that muscle look like?
What's that muscle look like? Exactly.
It reminds me of Viktor Frankl's Man's Search for Meaning, when he talks about everyone in all the death camps, where the ones that survived created these great pictures of how they were getting a little bit of rice, but it's an 11-course meal, and this is, I'm sure he didn't say tiramisu, but you know what I mean, where Viktor Frankl talks at length about what it was like to create those pictures, and some lived and some didn't. But doesn't it speak, John Fornoff, doesn't it speak to a young mind being a sponge? Mm-hmm. And before I throw it to you, I always think of that car commercial, you can pay me now or you can pay me later. Mm-hmm. Remember the old mechanics commercial?
Mm-hmm. Sure. Yeah.
But if you have a young child and he or she has a sponge, they're going to soak up something.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
why wouldn't a parent want to put them in the position to soak up this?
A child growing up with that imagination and that sponge you're talking about, there's something, as you participate, as you're listening to stories, Jesus told stories. Okay, I was reading the Bible the other day. It's like he never went anywhere without telling a story. Why is that? Because stories awaken your imagination. You place yourself in the story. You can see it, and it becomes part of you. Can you quote the Beatitudes like from start to finish? I can't.
Right.
But you ask anybody. I'm talking about anybody. Do you know the prodigal story? The prodigal son story?
Sure.
Yeah. Sure. You know the story. There's something about that. As a child, as growing up with those stories, it becomes part of you, part of your DNA, your spiritual DNA.
Are you saying that a part
stories
of the...
are sticky? Stories are sticky. Great, great. Right. Yeah,
that's
great.
I mean, they're sticky compared to somebody lectures you, and it's a frontal attack.
Yes,
there's mechanisms that we all have in our body that kind of act as, you know, sorry, Mark, I don't want to go Star Trek on you, but deflector shields.
Nice.
Some kind of deflector shields.
It's a natural defense.
It's a natural defense. Thanks, John.
Right. But Bill, would you say then that a part of what John was saying about Jesus telling stories, does a parable act to hang wallpaper? Does a parable make your mind, because it doesn't say it exactly, it makes your mind, as Bill said, a frontal soul. Sound construction and John Campbell hanging wallpaper.
Mm-hmm. Well, in a way, if you think Jesus spoke parables because he was, there was a problem. It's the germ which is the problem. As Bill was saying, we have a problem here about our kids. We have a problem about the philosophy and the culture that we're in. How are we able to utilize a parable? And essentially, this is what we're doing. I mean, with G.A. Henty, because we're going beyond the Henty story because we want to convey that the idea of, hey, we can all be heroes. We need heroes. We need strength. We need that. We need to start from ourselves, and we need to blow out. And so, you know, of course, I'm thinking about Bill. He had a problem. I mean, in his initial idea, the germ, and God has given us all talents. You know, sometimes I don't have the vision that maybe Bill or John would have, but he's given me another talent to be able to come alongside and promote that parable in my way to add to the overall project.
Well, Bill, wouldn't you say the parable of the mustard seed really didn't have a lot to do with the mustard seed?
Exactly.
It was a totally different story. And what you've been able to do with these guys is make sure that the wallpaper, the sound,
the wallpaper,
design, and everything else says, wait a minute, I better get my mind to slow down. Mm-hmm. I don't think they're really talking about a mustard seed.
Right.
But there's more to it. Do you think that's how it works?
Without a doubt. And I go back to Mark's connecting the dots. You know, that's such an appropriate thing. Listen, as an employer, guys, I have people come in here to try to get work a lot. So I'm dealing with today's generation.
Yeah.
And there are a few good men, as the Marines would say, and women. But a lot of the people that come in here not only could they not identify the Pacific Ocean on a map, they really have a hard time with any kind of thing that doesn't require this blocky one, two, three. In other words, if decisions have to be made, look, life isn't made out of two-by-fours, right? There's contingencies that are thrown at you every day. Right. So we have to be able to think. And so much of our thinking is predicated on just how we've been brought up, what tools we have, how strong is our memory muscle, our brain, whatever, our imagination. And they just, I'm telling you, in a very practical sense, we're losing our kids because we're losing our kids, their ability to imagine something. Mm. Now, I can only speak to my small microcosm here. Imagine what we're competing with worldwide as a nation where other places, I mean, if you go to China, for example, everything, they don't have the visual culture necessarily that we do. So our engineers even have to think in terms of imagination. Mm. What's possible and so forth. And I think we're falling behind. You can see this showing up in statistical data.
Yeah.
So that's the scary part for me as I see that and I think, what are we doing? Where are we going to leave our kids? What is the legacy?
Ladies and gentlemen, come on back. I know you will. Short break and right back to Off the Grid News.
Just a reminder, you're listening to Off the Grid News Radio here at offthegridnews.com.
Parents and grandparents, I'm Bill Hyde, and I hope you're enjoying this little behind-the-scenes look at the making of our brand-new audio theater adaptation of G.A. Henty's Under Drake's Flag. You know, most parents understand a child's physical body needs to be fed properly. To do it, you feed your kids wholesome nutritional foods. You want them to have all the vitamins and minerals they need to grow up strong. But what many parents forget is that their children need to take in sufficient quantities of moral and spiritual food as well. How do you do it? Well, the same way. You feed them wholesome and nutritious spiritual foods. You give them the mental and spiritual vitamins they need to grow up strong. Now, here's the exciting news. Like your child's physical body, thankfully, your child's mind will accept and absorb mental and spiritual vitamins without much effort. But unlike your child's physical body, your child's mind will digest and retain unlimited quantities of wholesome and nutritious spiritual food. Under Drake's Flag really is an all-natural, mentally healthy, pure dose of spiritual superfood. Check out the website at HentyAlive.com. That's HentyAlive.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to a very special edition of Off the Grid News, the radio version of OffTheGrid.com. Of course, here with Mr. Bill Hyde and three very special guests. Bill, I would dare say that these three, along with your team and a huge group of people, are terribly important to literally making Henty come alive.
Well, we've done our best, John, haven't we, John, Fornoff, to make this in the script and then in the music and the sound design and everything to make Henty come alive. And that's, as I said, that's what one of the things Brian Blessed had said when we were over there. He said, you know, this script, you guys actually made this history, Henty, come alive. Well, of course, the history is the story of Sir Francis Drake. It's the audio theater story of that, and we tell you that story through the medium audio, and so that's what we're talking about. We're talking about why did we decide to do this? We've talked about the quality side, and I think that this is a raising the bar thing, but I'd like to pursue that just a little bit, Brian, before we move on to some other things, because I think that the level of quality here for our listeners, I think we are trying to use that expression, we are trying to raise the bar. It is a Christocentric thing because basically Henty was a Christian and Sir Francis Drake was an extraordinary Christian. But I think that this, the appeal to this, guys, is going to transcend just that market. I think it's going to go a lot larger than that because there's lessons here for everybody. So if you want to...
Yeah, Bill, I love your word sticky you used in the last sticky break stories. Because it's sticky because of the story, because of the history, but it's also sticky because all the work that Mark Drury and John Campbell put into it to... I love that term, hanging the wallpaper. You know what I mean? To complete that sense of an audio parable so that your mind's drawn into it and you have to make those pictures yourself. John Fornoff, talk to us about that a little, please.
Well, it's interesting. Work on we've done a lot of projects together, John Campbell and Mark Drury, and we've done a lot of audio drums, and we love doing it. But this, there's something special about this show. I mean, really, just it stood out from the first when we were doing Foley. Rob Jorgensen did Foley with Mark Drury, and he said that is. I mean, Rob has done a lot of stuff as well. He said that is those are some of the best sound effects I have ever heard. It's like when they and what would you say as far as I mean the stuff you've comparing what you've ever. Also done, Mark, would you say?
Well, a lot of the Foley is doing a lot of that. It's the key word would be the subtleties that we're able to do. Because when you think of sound effects, for example, on a background, the sound of you're being outside and you hear the birds, or you have a fight scene, you hear guns and stuff, the Foley stuff is, it's all about the subtleties and those wonderful little nuances that we add, that just add those moments. When we have, there's a scene in the show with the Grand Inquisitor talking about these different torture
Spanish
devices.
Inquisition. Yeah, yeah. Okay.
These different torture devices that he's going to potentially subject our hero to. And just being able to go and have him lift up each one and have a particular sound, just very subtle, but picking up these little devices and things. And they're just those little things that help, again, kind of paint that picture for the audience of being there and seeing him actually do this and then having, you know, being actually moved into the scene and put into the scene.
You get scared when you listen to this. I mean, you picture imagination. And then on the music side, John, if you don't mind me saying, you can jump right in here. John says, you know, I just did the music for this. And he doesn't say this. You know, John is not one to, you know, go on and on about stuff, hyperbole stuff. He says, that's some of the best. In fact, I think he said, that is the best music I've ever done. Is that, did you say
well,
something
it,
like
it,
that?
Well, it's true because, you know, for me, I think the one thing I have to be careful with is, you know, I never want to be painted as the one-trick pony. Mm-hmm. This is my sound. This is what I do. Of course, as a composer, I have a signature sound. But the challenge for me is doing things that don't sound John Campbell-esque. Mm-hmm. And so there's a certain challenge among any project that I have to switch it in such a way so people don't associate that with like, oh, well, you did that on that show. Sometimes it will happen. But for me, painting that picture and that underscore, because it's just an exciting new way to, and it's almost like I have to, the way I write on many of these shows, and this is one of the things with the Henty show, is I usually don't read the script all the way through. I'm reading as I'm going and anticipating what's going to happen, and then I write the cue as I go. Because
kind of like how the listener's going to listen to
exactly.
it. They're not going to read the script all the way through.
I'm
either,
bringing
John.
The emotion of like what's going to happen, and I let that shine in the music because it gives me a sense of a place to go, and it's really a great way for me. Of course, I understand the overall arc,
sure.
but I don't want to know the details because I want that to come out in the music. Mm.
And it does.
but as I was saying with Henty, this just came at a time when I was fiddling around with some new sounds and some new ideas, and then of course with the Henty idea, I was having so much fun with it. I was getting lost in just the fun of the script and the story. It was like as I said, I've done this for a long time, and you know, there's sometimes. You know, I work on commercial projects, all sorts of things. Sometimes I walk in and go, I don't want to write today. But man, with this particular project, I was so excited about writing. And now even listening back, which I rarely do, I thought, wow, I did this? This is amazing.
Very cool. Yeah. Bill, let me ask you, why Under Drake's Flag? I mean, with your library, and you've read a lot. I learn stuff from you every time we hang out, whether it's on the air, off the air, just doing our normal stuff here. Why did you pick Under Drake's Flag? He's got dozens of books, Henty books. Why did that one grab you?
As you said, Brian, I think Henty is a bigger-than-life character and a writer of over 120 books. So he had a lot to choose from. And in looking at that, I know my son had read some of the books. And I think really what came to the surface was just some of the doable, what's doable, what really captures all of the things that we've been talking about. And, of course, Mark read that one and said,
yeah,
this is it. And then as you look at Under Drake's Flag and Sir Francis Drake, what you find is a most remarkable hero. And someone who's a human being, someone who's a sinner in that sense, but someone that has all the qualities that a parent would want their kids to have. And here's a guy, he was literally, I don't know if you know this, John, but I was reading a biography the other day, he was chased out. The time that he was born, he was the youngest of 12 kids, and he was chased out of the area that they lived by the Catholics at that time because the Protestants, this was with Henry VIII, they wanted to start using this Protestant prayer book. And so the Catholics said, no way, baby. And his father was a lay preacher. And so they got chased out of their home, and he was literally, they chased him all the way across the country, and he literally was born in a ship. He was born in a ship. He grew up in the water. And it explains some stuff, doesn't it, John, in terms of his navigational ability? That was instinctive in him because he'd been in boats since he was a little boy. And his dad was busy with his work and so forth. And so he was able to start to navigate and do some of these things. And here's the key, guys. He took on responsibility very young.
Of course. Mm,
he was sailing and working for somebody very young. And so we have school kids today, 17 years old, that
sure.
and 18 years old, and they come out and they go to college and they still don't have any practical experiences. Drake, on the other hand, when he was very young, he was on ships and navigating some of that area down by Plymouth.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's just a fascinating story. And he... let's just talk about this for a little bit, because the early part, and this is the power of the gospel as far as I'm concerned, is a couple of his first voyages he went on with his cousin, John Hawkins, and they were slaving trips. And all of Drake's father's teaching, Edmund Drake, his father, was big on the book of Romans and just drilled Romans into those boys over and over and over. And so... he went on this trip with John Hawkins as a slaver, and he got to the point where he said, you know what, I can't do this anymore. Mm-hmm. And so the gospel, in terms of it not being just, are you saved? You know, it wasn't that. It was, what are the implications of this belief system for my life? And so in Drake, we see in a remarkable man that lived by his faith, and we can talk more about him, John, but I mean, it's you couldn't find a better story if you want a child to listen to how someone lived.
Yeah.
And who lived by example. Amazing.
Yeah, you know, it was interesting. We were in London, and Mark and I went on board the Golden Hind. It was a perfect replica of the Golden Hind that Captain Drake piloted. And you're on this ship, okay, and it's a small thing. It's like it's little. And you're thinking, this was used. He used this little ship to take on 90-something Spanish galleons. I mean, he pulled up this little ship next to the big ones, and the Spanish went, okay, we surrender. What? Why was that? I think we kind of hinted at it in the show, is I think there's a favor of God on this man. There's something remarkable, miraculous was happening.
So much so, John, that when he would go to the West Indies, a couple more interesting things about mm-hmm. him, because he was not a normal human being. Something about this guy. When word got out that he was going to set sail for the West Indies, everyone in Lisbon, because they would sail down through there on their way to the West, they would evacuate the town. Imagine Spain evacuating their coastlines, and just because he was going to sail by.
Mm-hmm.
And he did something that John is alluding to that was most amazing. I think brinkmanship maybe would be one of the things that you would put if you looked that up in the dictionary. He was fearless, but he almost single-handedly destroyed the Spanish Armada, as you say. The equivalent today of some Russian kid taking six boats and destroying America's Navy. What's the likelihood of that?
Well, you were talking about, also I think Drake was a product of his upbringing. Of his father, his own father, and that's a lesson that I think we should all learn, especially for families today, that our children are a product of who we are. And, I mean, for me, I think the story is, I didn't just become a musician, a composer, because I kind of went one day, oh, I want to do this. My father was a musician, and he spent his time from age of 4 or 5 teaching me his craft. As I grew up and saw all my friends kind of playing around and figuring things out, you know, they come back later. So many of them said, I wished I played piano, or I wish I kept doing this. But they got sidetracked with something else. But I'm a perfect example of the product that my father and my parents, instilled in me. And that is a thing we talk about, Drake, but it's also just a great lesson that we
And John, he learned those things and applied them in his life.
Absolutely.
And I think one of the more remarkable things about him, too, do you remember during that period of time when the ship sailed, they had to find sailors. And so let's say we were coming out of a tavern some night, Mark and I, and somebody hits you over the head and you wake up in a galley ship or something. Mm-hmm. The phrase was pressed into service.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Right? This guy is so remarkable that it's said by the folks that lived during his time that he had 300 people in line waiting to sail for him at any given time.
Mm-hmm.
This was the character of this man.
Yes.
He had prayer twice a day on the ship. Mm-hmm. That was standard. He wouldn't let you go to brothels. He wouldn't let you go, even use foul language, a little bit like George Washington.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the most remarkable things about Drake, as we kind of get into his character, and it comes up in our production, John, but one of the most remarkable things is 400 years ahead of his time in treating blacks, in treating Indians, in treating women, in treating, in terms of this guy, really, in treating Spanish prisoners.
Yeah.
He treated everyone with dignity and respect.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And it was just, he was a game changer because of that. And I think, John, maybe that's why you're saying God honored that yes. on some level in his life, and he really had the wind in his sails, the kind of the thing that yeah. you're remarking about.
Mm. Absolutely.
Well, you know, I thought the very first time Bill shared this with me is I listened to the audio program, and Bill had shared with me the Sir Francis Drake's prayer from 1577, the Disturb Us, Lord. And what grabbed me was the last two sentences. I'll do the whole paragraph quickly, but it says, "Disturb us, Lord, when we are too pleased with ourselves, when our dreams have come true because we dreamed too little, mm-hmm. when we arrived safely because we sailed too close to the shore." And when you said just now, Bill, that he grew up as a little kid, he was on a boat, I didn't realize this was an autobiography. He's talking about because he had dreamed too little, and the whole time brought up one of 12, you said they had to keep moving. So his call to action is to make sure that we don't sail too close to the shore. And maybe that's what the divine recognized in him, going, look, this guy's not about the shallows. He's about the deep, and the people that are about the deep are the ones to make things happen.
You've just hit on it, Brian. I think with Drake, what you find is a guy that believed in God's providence so much, he said, you know, if this God that I worship and I'm safe looking, he's the same God out in a deep storm. He's the same God in a perfect storm. As he is, if I'm sailing down the shore of someplace, I can see I can actually see the shore. So he knew that very well, and that trust that he had, almost an unshakable faith and confidence that was unparalleled for his time. I mean, he really, and when you think about the favor that he had in the court, I mean, unlike Walter Raleigh, he had nobody sort of guarding a spot for him in the Queen's court. He kept his head during a time when Queen Elizabeth was making quick use of the hatchet among people that fell out of favor. Yeah. So the queen respected him. Everyone respected this man. And it said he really treated his inferiors with unbelievable dignity and respect. Yeah. If you were equal to him in social status, he was a pretty good guy to you. But if you were above him, he gave you a hard time. Now, I read that in a biography just the other day.
Well, who does that remind you of?
Well, Jesus, Brian, because we're talking about wisdom and stature. How did he grow? He grew
wisdom and in stature and in favor with God and man.
Both God and man. There's Sir Francis Drake. Mm-hmm. Not without imperfections. Like the rest of us, he had his.
But as you say, Drake wasn't always that fired up with the big wigs above him. Jesus wasn't all that fired up when he went in the temple, the way I read it. Mm-hmm. But when he came out, he's hanging out with people that had nothing. He's hanging out with people of his day that everyone else considered to be, right, impure. And he gets in some pretty hot water himself. So that's when you first said that to me, that's how I kind of looked at Drake and go, I get it. I get it now.
So, Brian, for people that are sailing their ships a little too close to shore, I think that's just, I mean, Tony Robbins can step aside, right? All the motivators. Yeah. Read Drake's prayer, everybody.
Absolutely.
You want to get motivated for life? You want to do something? You want to step out? Mm-hmm. You want to make a difference in life? Read that prayer and then just do something.
Mm. Well, Bill, in the second paragraph, he says, we have lost our thirst for the waters of life. And guys, just so you know, Mark and John and John and Bill, when I first heard this, it resonated in me to such a degree that parents are going to be able to use what you've done to trigger that thirst for the waters of life if their kids have reached a certain point and they don't possess that passion, that grit to explore. We talked earlier, John Fornoff, about a young mind being a sponge. Mm-hmm. When Bill shared this prayer with me, we have lost our thirst for the waters of life. I think what you guys do under Drake's flag and Henty Alive is to reunite a taste for those waters of life. And you do it with a great story. You do a great production, great audio. But as an outsider looking in, I truly am. That's what you did for me with this was it spoke to me of Drake's prayer. And that's, you know,
John,
restarting
that thirst. Ian Cullen when he delivered Drake's prayer in the studio?
Oh, yeah.
There, it was really an unusual.
Yes.
And even the actors, some of the people that had never heard that before, I think, were taken back mm-hmm. by the depth of who this man was.
Oh, yeah. And when he, I remember there was a moment in the studio, and Mark was reminding about this, is when Ian Cullen, as Sir Francis Drake, when he read that prayer at the end, there's a moment in the studio when he went, wow. that was it. That was the take.
And,
it
and
was
you'll just, be, yeah, and yeah. people listening will hear that.
Mm-hmm.
Because oh, yeah. It's a most remarkable, Ian's a total pro, and it's a most remarkable reading.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Mm-hmm. And then Mark put some sound behind it, and got some music behind it. It's a moment. It is a moment, yeah.
Bill, unfortunately, we're already out of the hour. We've got a couple minutes left, so any final thoughts, obviously, about Henty Alive or Under Drake's Flag or our guest today, Mark Drury, John Fornoff, John Campbell, anything else you want to say before we let him go?
No, just go to the website, hentyalive.com. Check it out. Read the stuff. Watch the video that we have up there. I think you'll catch a little bit of this fever, and I hope everybody enjoys it, Brian.
All right, Mark, how about you, sir, before we let you go?
The one thing we haven't mentioned in all this is the brilliance of the actors and what they brought to this.
Groovy.
We've for years, used kind of a troop of actors in England that, because we have a brilliant man over there called Philip Glassborough, who's our casting director, and he's had literally 30 years of experience working with the BBC and doing all kinds of different, what they call radio plays over there. And we really would be remiss to not mention the level the actors brought to this, the way they raised it with their performances. And obviously, we can't go through all the list of names, but a lot of the principals we had, we mentioned Ian Cullen and the main characters, they just brought so much to this. All these actors just did so much in the studio to take this to that extra level that then when we come back and John Campbell and I then work on the production side of it, it just makes it that much more exciting to work on, knowing you've got this brilliant material and performances to work with.
Mm-hmm. John Campbell, how about you, sir, before we go?
I'm just so thrilled to be a part of it because there was magic in what I was given. It just continued to produce magic. This was one of those shows where the writing became really easy because I just knew where it was going and I could see it. And so, Bill, thanks for all your help in this and creating this idea, and for John Fornoff and you guys to continue to work together. And I'm thrilled. I want to do it again.
Mm-hmm. They do a great job, Bill, of setting each other up because they've even helped me produce the end of the show. So now that he's tossed it to Mr. John Fornoff, John, any closing thoughts before we let you go?
Just our prayer is that this will excite the imagination of children, but also just call
not
them
just
something,
children, but
families, and just call them to something greater, and just put some hope in them. And if there's something special with it, we've done a lot of those shows like this, and we love doing it, but this is something really special about this show. And with the help of people listening right now, I mean, we could make this whole series. I mean, a whole series. There are 122 books. I mean, this is just one of them. And we would love to do more. So with their support, just go to hentyalive.com and listen. Pick up a sample of it. Listen to this and buy them. This is gonna change you.
Remind people that you can listen to the first section for free.
Very cool.
So that's, at a minimum, someone should go and just hang out and do that and take in some of this.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you'll get a flavor of it. Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, we want to thank, as always, Mr. Bill Hyde, Mark Drury, John Fornoff, John Campbell for being in on today's show. I'm going to leave you with this, not mine. It's from Drake's Prayer. Disturb us, Lord, to dare more boldly, to venture on wilder seas. Go ahead, as Mr. Fornoff said, check out ahentyalive.com. You will have the opportunity to venture on those very wilder seas yourselves. As always, thank you so very much for joining us here at Off the Grid News, the radio version of offthegrid.com. We know an hour is a huge chunk of your day, and it truly is an honor to get to spend it with you. Thank you so very much once again from everyone here at Off the Grid News.
This has been Off the Grid News Radio. For more information, go to offthegridnews.com.
Brian Brody back with you, and I'd like to thank you for listening to today's podcast presentation of the making of G.A. Henty's Under Drake's Flag. We hope you enjoyed today's show, and I'd like to ask you right now to stay tuned for a very special message from executive producer Bill Hyde. Bill's going to tell you how you can get more involved with the Henty Alive Project. Here's Bill.
Thanks for listening to today's podcast. If you love history, if you love adventure, if you're like me and you love your kids and grandkids and want them to have heroes worth emulating, you're going to absolutely love Under Drake's Flag. Here's what you should do right now. Go to hentyalive.com. That's hentyalive.com. H-E-N-T-Y alive.com. Watch the video, read the exciting story about how all of this came about, and I'd like to ask you for something more. I'd like to ask for your help. You see, it's my belief that we're in a life or death battle.
for the hearts and minds of the next generation. And that means there's never been a time in our country's history when we've seen and felt the direct effects of turning our backs on God. Folks, we need culture warriors. We need sons and daughters of Issachar who see what's happening to us right before our very eyes. So here's what I'm asking you to do. Go to the website where it says Best Deal and buy 10, 20, maybe even 50 or 100 copies of Under Drake's Flag. You're probably already thinking of a child that this new audio presentation will impact profoundly. Let's do this together. Let's give our children a strong legacy, a powerful future, one they can pass on to their children. Our journey begins at HentyAlive.com, where you can begin to live the adventure. Thanks for listening. I'm Bill Hyde.